Team Cherry's Hollow Knight, funded by a Kickstarter in 2017, is a prime example of the ongoing strength of indie games. As the developer's debut, it's been an enormously successful and well-received start. Players quickly became enamoured with Hollow Knight's masterful Metroidvania gameplay, brought to life at every turn by a strikingly unique visual style. It's a title you can truly lose yourself in, through its dark, atmospheric environments and dense sound design. Besides some individual character voices, the entirety of Hollow Knight's audio is the work of Christopher Larkin. After handling music for Outfolded and Expand, two smaller games with their own fascinating tales to come in this podcast series, Christopher was well set to take on a larger, story-driven project. His soundtrack for Hollow Knight is a perfect reflection of the dank surroundings you explore, and it becomes all the more immersive as it subtly changes depending on your movements. Team Cherry soon added to their world with significant updates, bringing new areas, enemies, and narrative to the experience. Another planned update, Silksong, has grown so large that it's now scheduled to release as a full standalone title. Thankfully, Team Cherry and players alike recognised Christopher Larkin's importance to the original game, and he's hard at work constructing Silksong's musical aesthetic as I record this. I'm Lee Tyrrell, and this is The Sound Test, where I look in depth into video game audio and music, along with the very people who crafted it. This episode features Christopher Larkin in his first sound test appearance, discussing Hollow Knight's audio at length. As such, there are a few small spoilers about certain characters and story elements, just as a fair warning in case you haven't yet completed the game. Later in this series, you'll hear more about his beginnings in VGM, and the innovative approach he took from day one. But Hollow Knight was a significant point in his career. It presented several new challenges due to its size, and introduced Christopher's music to a far wider audience. So how did he come to join Team Cherry for their first major undertaking in the industry?
I got involved after they had secured their funding from Kickstarter. So it was a Kickstarter game, and when they did their Kickstarter, they had already built quite a lot of the game in an engine which I always forget the name of. For some reason, I always want to call it SketchUp, but it's called Stencil, I think. I think that's right. It's this other game engine which they used to build the game. A lot of the areas of the game, like Crossroads, and I think to a certain extent City of Tears and an early version. Early versions of all these areas were kind of in a certain state. And then not long after they got kickstarted, they decided to move to the engine called Unity. So in a way, they were kind of rebuilding it from scratch at the same time. I think not long after they started sort of rebuilding it in the engine, I was brought on board. In terms of starting writing music for it, I'd already been able to see some of those areas in their early states, and it kind of helped with kind of establishing the themes and the sort of feel of the music from an early point.
Because of that early involvement, Christopher was able to work a lot of growth and development into his soundtrack. As we'll come to explore, the music has its own progression as you move through the game, using melody, rhythm, and instrumentation to tell stories through sound alone. But before any of that comes into play, the dynamic nature of Hollow Knight's score is clear. Individual areas come with their own themes, split into three layers depending on circumstance. Combat, for instance, generally has a layer of its own. It's an effectively minimal approach to adaptive music, which doesn't trip itself up with overcomplicated transitions.
In a lot of the early areas of the game, and especially the first few pieces of music I wrote, I didn't think that we'd split it up. I can't remember exactly, but I believe it was pretty much R.E.M. Williams, so Team Cherry's idea to split things up. We always talked about the possibility of having like a separate action layer to come in during battles and stuff. But having it a third layer... Okay, so before I should actually explain our philosophy behind, I think, the layered stuff. So in the music of Hollow Knight, which is a very exploratory kind of, I like to say open world, but it's more like underworld game because it takes place under the ground in these caves with all these hand-drawn insects and stuff. With the music in a lot of these areas, we have three different layers going on. Two of them make up the majority of the music, so there's two layers are playing in a lot of the main areas of these areas, if that makes sense. So if you're in a central, large-ish room, generally you'll hear those two layers of the music. So there'd be stuff happening in the top end in the treble sort of instruments and then stuff happening in the bass. When you go to a side room, something that's a bit more mysterious or a bit more closed off, we often take out a lot of those bass instruments. So this one of those two layers, so we're only left with one, which is a bit more mysterious and a bit more higher pitched, if you like. And then there's this third layer that might come in if we're fighting an enemy or if there's a lock-in, enemies that you have to fight in order to open the doors of a room or if it's a mini-boss or something like that. So yeah, that's sort of been our approach to a lot of these different areas, and I think we sort of came up with that early on, and it was definitely Team Cherry who encouraged me not to go beyond just thinking in terms of just three, because it's very easy to get too complicated too quick, so we just try to keep it as simple as possible, and that's part of the philosophies behind Hollow Knight and also the scores, is just try and keep it simple.
There are many ways to incorporate adaptive music into modern games, and it's probably the most profound difference between VGM and more linear composition for other mediums. That's why this podcast takes such a keen interest in its development over the years, from early experiments like Wing Commander to No Man's Sky's Infinite Music Machine, not forgetting other acclaimed systems on the way, such as iMuse and Left 4 Dead's Dynamic Director. None of those scores follow the same rules or use the same kind of ingredients behind the scenes. Some rely on short, thematic cues, where others play with varying ambience, or even switch around instrumentation, as heard in Banjo-Kazooie. When it comes to Hollow Knight's swelling soundtrack, how do Christopher's pieces manifest in-game?
It's three stems. Music is often divided into stems, and usually, like, for example, in film, for the mixing engineer of the film, the stems would relate to the different instrument groups. So you might have a strings stem or a brass stem. But in the case of games, you might want to have a set of stems dedicated to perhaps something fast-paced, so like a lot of the percussion and energetic short articulations that are suggesting something more fast-paced and action-like are on one stem. So when that fades up, you feel like the music has suddenly gotten more intense. So that stem would be, Unity's converting a lot of this to Ogg Vorbis format, so that's basically encapsulated in a file, and basically we've just got three files going in sync, and then they're faded up and down as needed. And William from Team Cherry has done a huge amount of work in that area, getting that all programmed and set up. Sometimes it just needs that little subtle adjustment to the mix of the music, and even just something really small can influence the experience of the game, I think.
Movements between different rooms in any area triggers its overarching theme to follow suit. And so that philosophy continues into the game as a whole. By Hollow Knight's final sections, there's much about the music that builds on what came before. But Dirtmouth, the first piece heard during gameplay, leaves plenty of room for that growth, letting its beautiful melody ring out on a simple piano and strings.
When we start off, the player, especially the player, is much less sure of where they are. When we've just arrived at Dirtmouth, the landscape around us isn't very welcoming. It's very cold. There's a town, obviously, so we have a theme for that town. But even in that town, like, there's almost no one there except for Elderbug and. Everything is quite isolated and lonely. It's only when you get further into the game that you discover more characters, more enemies, and as that player's making that progression, I think the player also gains a sense of ownership and confidence, and then through that sort of thing is reflected in, hopefully, the music and the sound as well.
By Crystal Peak, an environment you encounter later in the game, the music has played with a number of tones and instruments, all while retaining a strong thread that connects the whole as one. Everything Christopher wrote for the title is undeniably Hollow Knight, no matter what sounds lead any given piece. Wherever you go as the knight himself, the audio never betrays the core feel of the project, but it still leans faithfully into the character of each location. Crystal Peak is a great example of that, anchored by the glittering twinkle of guitar harmonics. Thank you.
with Crystal Peak when I was about to approach writing that for that area. I think a lot of these instrumental choices are based sometimes on trying to get myself unstuck and coming up with like a musical solution to a bit of a problem. So like, I think the reason guitar ended up on that is because I always find guitar harmonics can sometimes sound quite crystal-like. And I don't know, I'm not a synesthesiac and I don't always associate instrumental sounds with shapes and colours and all that sort of thing, but for some reason I associate certain instruments like more, maybe it's more of an emotional connection or something, I don't know, but yeah, the harmonics of the guitars could be potentially be something to do with crystals and glassy looking things, so the guitar ended up in that situation, and then it gets a bit lower and a bit heavier and the harmonics are thrown out the window in favour of something a bit more rock and roll. That's me trying to play, and I'm not doing a very good job. It took me 10 million takes and a few little bit of editing, but yeah, I think the concept of having an instrument for a certain character or a certain area is something that ended up working quite well in the end, and it's something I think I'd like to do a lot more of in future.
Outside of battle, the game takes an ethereal slant that perfectly matches the mysterious caverns you discover. Though the action layer usually adds an extra pulse of urgency to the score, bosses demand even more intensity. Boss themes have historically been a different genre entirely in video game music, and Hollow Knight gave Christopher his first chance to write some of his own. His previous work in games, though highly innovative, didn't feature anything like a traditional boss fight. So how did he tackle the task, and what did he have to keep in mind?
In regards to approaching boss music for the first time, I guess I drew on things that I liked about other games and other boss tracks for other games. And one thing I did notice that I wanted to try and avoid a bit was too much dynamic movement within one boss track. So I'm going to sound like I'm criticizing this, and someone might be offended by this, but I remember playing or watching my brother play Monster Hunter. This was an early version of Monster Hunter. I can't remember which one, but I just noticed something that really stuck out to me when he was playing it through was certain swells, like in the middle of the boss track, there'd be this sudden build-up of dynamic, and the orchestra sort of gets really big for a moment and then comes back down again, and then it would come sort of stay down and then come up again. And that particular track, I can't remember which one it was, but that kind of, I just didn't think it was as effective as other tracks of the game where the dynamic was staying much louder throughout. So something that I try to do a fair bit with boss tracks is to make them work such that when they loop, you're not just hearing that one little build-up in the middle of the track every time it loops. You're hearing an entire track as a full, intense, boss track. But then again, like, if you're sort of thinking of having the dynamic full all the time, you run the risk of not having a lot of progression in the music. So I think it's sort of a bit of give and take. You don't want it to get too flat, but at the same time you want a bit of movement, and I think that movement for me happens more in the harmonic changes and the melodic progressions and all that sort of thing.
Hollow Knight's bosses form an impressive rogues gallery, bursting with personality. This allowed Christopher to break from the restrained feel of most level tracks, usually by upping the tempo and introducing new textures. The Mantis Lords are a good example, represented in the music by Regal Harpsichord. There's a multitude of distinct bosses to overcome across the game, and they often have specific soundtracks. Others use an area's action layer, or certain themes that score several fights. Put simply, boss music makes up a lot of Hollow Knight's soundtrack. So how does Christopher go about defining such a diverse cast?
I would always try to talk with Team Cherry about what the character of the boss should be, and the music in the boss fight ends up becoming part of that character or part of the emotion behind the fight. So trying to, I guess, hone down on what that is before I start writing is really important. But sometimes I don't always get it and we have to rewrite it, which is fine. It's part of the process. With Mantis Lords, the Mantis race kind of suggested something that that they're quite an elegant race, right? And they kind of seemed very classy in a way. For some reason, I guess I associate the harpsichord with kind of, and this might be misinterpreted perhaps in some way, but like the upper class and courtly sort of communities. And for some reason I just sort of thought that maybe the harpsichord would I guess work in that situation, so we gave it a go. But also I was influenced by the music of Vivaldi and Bach, and obviously that music uses a lot of harpsichord as well. I mean, they've written for the harpsichord a lot, and I just decided to give it a go in that situation. It's also something I talked to Team Cherry about early on, and I think it's sort of a while back now, so I can't remember which came first, but I think either the area track that uses a bit of harpsichord in it was written first, and then I wrote the boss track, or the other way around. In any case, I think I gave them a sketch of the track just with harpsichord, and we just decided that, yeah, that sounds cool, let's use that instrument in a way as a mnemonic for the characters and the area.
Harpsichord was just right for the Mantis Lord's class and decorum, but a boss like Dung Defender is quite the opposite. Though honourable in his intentions, his affinity for Dung makes him a somewhat ridiculous figure, accentuated by his bravado and tragic backstory. Brass is an inspired choice to convey that, capturing Dung Defender's heroic streak while pushing his blowhard attitude at the same time.
Dung Defender is a really cool character. He's quite like, he's sort of a hero, and we wanted to give him that sense of give him a hero theme, basically. So I decided to give a theme in the French horns, and in a way, while it's sort of quite a funny situation or character, the fact that he's like surrounded by dung. He's obviously a dung beetle, but He's got a sense of pride, and I don't know, we sort of also in a way wanted to treat that seriously, even though it's sort of funny, like not being too silly with the music, but give him quite a majestic hero theme, I guess. So that's, I guess, why I chose to utilize the French horns and the brass a bit more in that situation.
As bombastic as Dung Defender is, Hollow Knight's bosses only grow darker and more imposing. The last few bosses, rightfully, can be described without exaggeration as epic. Bolstered by choirs and dedicated orchestral sounds, the weight of those final fights is felt wholeheartedly in the music. It's also part of the overall musical progression that builds throughout the game, mirroring the player's deeper and more dangerous dive into the world.
As we get a bit more into the story, there are aspects of the storyline that, for me, I wanted to express in a more operatic way, I guess, because it sort of triggered that in me. So, but also we discussed it, Team Cherry and I, Will, Ari and I, the sort of instrumental forces that we want to use, especially for some of the later bosses in the game. The orchestra and the ridiculous choir stuff that happened later, I never thought that I would end up there, so I sort of tried to focus on something smaller. And I think that the result of that philosophy actually ended up resulting in something that got bigger and bigger.
With one man, Christopher, behind the music's composition, how did he actually record and produce his sounds? Games bring with them a multitude of options when it comes to audio, ranging from the manipulation of simple waveforms to the incredible power of full orchestras. Composers can capture their own, or session players' performances on chosen instruments, and mix that with careful synthesis and library sounds to craft an infinite web of possibilities. For Hollow Knight, Christopher did just that. But what informs his decisions when it comes to instrumentation?
Live is always the best if it can be done and done well. Tim Cheel, who performed viola on... and he also plays some violin. I can't remember which track it is, but... I think there was a little bit of violin as well. And Amelia Jones, who did a fantastic job. The live musicians have done a fantastic job. And I think it's always best if you can record with a real human being. That said, the majority of pretty much everything else is sampled. And in terms of the technical process, it's always different. But for a lot of the boss tracks especially, I try to plan out the entire track on a MIDI piano track first. So I don't like arranging between different instruments until I have an entire piece kind of figured out first. And then through going through the piano track and deciding, basically then I go through and decide what melodies, melodic lines and what harmony. Sequences should go on what instruments.
Along with Tim Cheel and Amelia Jones, Christopher's use of samples is bolstered by his own experiments with guitar and violin. Otherwise, His palette of library sounds did most of the heavy lifting. Of course, Hollow Knight's dark, brooding soundtrack wouldn't have been so singular if it weren't for a fair amount of manipulation and flair in their use. As contemplative as the game so often is, Christopher would have to work with small, detailed brushstrokes to avoid sounding heavy-handed.
I might, like, for example, in the Crystal Peak track, pick up a guitar and start sampling some weird harmonic sounds and then pitch shifting them, and or in the case of Crossroads, I think that track started off with low harp and strings, so those main low chords that you hear, but a lot of the stuff on top is a bit of high strings, but there's also some granular effects that I do. I can't remember how I make everything, but during the process of writing the score for Hollow Knight, I was kind of obsessed with granular processing, and that's specifically using a synthesizer called Padshot, and that is a synthesizer in Cubase, and I bought the pro version of it. So what you can do with this particular synthesizer is, if you have a little sample on your session, you can drag and drop that sample into Padshot, and then you can use the synthesizer to play back that sample in lots and lots of tiny little grains. This is what a granular sampler/synthesizer does. And in both the music and the sound design, I use that to generate a lot of different things. And one use is to, if you have a really small sound, it's a really cool way to make a really long version of it by using the synthesizer and introducing lots of little tiny small dynamic changes and ebbs and flows, and yeah, there's a bit of that sort of stuff going on as effects in, for example, like I mentioned, the Crossroads track, and then every now and again I might pick up a violin. I can't play violin, but might do a little tremolo effect and then put that in there too. So that's the more sound designy stuff that I did more in those atmospheric tracks, but for the big orchestral stuff, it's definitely mostly MIDI triggered samples. To continue on with the technical stuff, I guess I'm using a lot of contact related libraries, like Cine samples, some Spitfire stuff. I actually started this kind of crazy career with Vienna Standard Edition, I think it was, so the VSL libraries. It was like an entry-level library that I bought, but I still use that heaps for woodwinds. Symphobia ends up in there quite a lot, and there's probably a whole bunch of others that I've forgotten, but yeah, so... quite a few libraries there. I do all this within Cubase, so Cubase is the DAW or desktop audio workstation that I use. And for a lot of Hollow Knight, there was a sort of a master template that I used. A lot of tracks were already written before I built this template, but I got to the point where I realized that I really need to have a bit of a standard of instruments. So when I opened up, say, a session of Cubase to start writing a boss track, there's already most of my main orchestral collections there ready to go before I start.
Collecting the right instruments, actually composing, and the production that ties it all together are often just parts of the job. As game audio has expanded, sound effects are regularly split into a task of their own, taken on by a dedicated professional, or even a full team. For smaller, indie titles like Hollow Knight, they come with the composition. Recording sound effects presents many of the same problems as music, such as when to use library sounds or personally recorded Foley. The answer to that is usually answered by the scope of the game and its aesthetic. So what was the best choice for Christopher and Team Cherry?
It was mostly library compared to Foley, although it wasn't just a case of drag and drop. There's quite a lot of pitch shifting, manipulation, layering. I guess most sound designers have a similar process, but and also the fact that we didn't have a budget to spend on lots of different musicians, perhaps, and also other sound designers and all this sort of thing. So it had to be a thing where I really had to use the resources that I already had to do all the music and make all the sound effects and really draw on techniques that I'd learnt over the years. So with the sound effects, there's definitely a lot of library stuff happening. There's quite a bit of, especially for footsteps, jumps and other kind of more movement related actions, there's a lot more Foley going on. And I've just discovered, for example, making jumps, and I was actually just making some earlier, by just moving fabric, like, and I've just literally been performing it on my clothes. So for a jump, especially like Mantis Lords and Hornet and all these other characters, I'm giving away a trick, I guess, but like, I'll just do it now in front of them. It's really as simple as that. So it's finding these like little tricks that really speed up the process and make it more enjoyable as well, because when you're just using libraries all the time and dragging, dropping stuff in or copying and pasting some MIDI, you don't get that human touch.
In terms of audio, a human touch is obvious in the game's whimsical, gibberish dialogue.
Na minobis, manamatu churo namu.
Hollow Knight is full of distinct voices, all performed by people connected to the production, but without any established language. It features a full cast of characters with their own associated actors, making its lack of a traditional script even more interesting. Games have a history with this kind of speech, probably best known through Simlish. For Hollow Knight, it helped establish the tone and present a truly otherworldly atmosphere.
O jittery, madaula misu.
A lot of the voices are performed by William Pellin from Team Cherry, Ari, Makoto Koji, and many family and friends of the team. I did some. I tend to end up doing more of the screams, the more sound-designed kind of voices, and I think a few little crazy insects, like sort of thing. But a lot of it is actually William, who did a fantastic job on that sort of stuff. And Makoto is the voice of Hornet.
Garama!
Yeah, but in terms of how they go about doing that, one technical thing I guess I could say is that they had to make up or find ways of using gibberish but not sticking to the same vowel sound and same consonant all the time. So to be honest, I can't remember exactly what they did, but I think they found a way of generating text and then like reading that backwards or something. I'll have to ask Will and Ari how they did it, but just so that people don't get stuck and just saying the same thing over and over, there was a little system in place that they put together to sort of help with everyone's vocal performance.
Boo! Aku mera! Ha!
because the team was taking care of a lot of that, that gave me time to really focus my skills, I guess, on the more abstract sounds and Foley sounds and the music. So, but it all worked in the end. And towards the end of production, I spent a lot of time with Team Cherry in the studio, and we sat around and did heaps of playthroughs. And with the playthroughs, it was sort of also a bit of a slow-moving mix session, where we kept writing to-do lists of certain sounds and assets that were too loud or too soft, and that was the process.
When Christopher took on audio for Hollow Knight, it was an intense time in many ways. Besides his numerous responsibilities for the final release, it demanded dedicated work throughout production to better understand the project. Impressively, it doesn't stop there for Christopher and Hollow Knight. It continued on into several updates and downloadable extras, which themselves led to the full-blown sequel, Silksong, still unreleased as I record this podcast. Those updates brought so much new music with them that a supplementary soundtrack, Gods and Nightmares, became necessary. It keeps up the instrumental growth heard in the base game, sometimes taking a greater influence from rock and metal. How does Christopher feel about his ongoing work for Hollow Knight? And how did its new differences develop?
For some reason, with those tracks, they came together really well. We kind of knew exactly what we wanted to do. And I don't know why, but especially with the Grim and the Nightmare stuff, because it was a Halloween theme, and because it was obviously connected to the story and all that sort of stuff, but because it was such a stylistic direction with the Halloween stuff, it kind of gave us a bit of freedom in a way to really push that and go out there a little bit further than I otherwise would if it was just for one of the earlier bosses in Hallownest. It's that one instance where I'd introduced the guitar a bit more, and I was actually just sort of testing the waters a bit. So I threw the heavy guitar and drums in, thinking that Team Cherry would say, "Not, can you take that out?" And they never did, so it stayed. And it was sort of what I wanted to do from the start, so I'm glad it made it. It had to have a heavenly, godlike sound, and as a result, I reached for the choir a lot to fill that role. So in a way, I guess it's sort of an instrumental, if you can call, or I guess, yeah, vocal slash instrumental thematic connection to the type of bosses that we're dealing with. So in that case, it was definitely choir. And as a result of adding the choir in, all of a sudden everything just gets bigger and bigger, so.
As I record this, it's a truism that indie games tend to trump AAA releases in heart and style. But still, sometimes a single title has a visceral appeal that puts huge studios and their gargantuan budgets to shame. Hollow Knight is one of those games, which is why an ever-thriving community has helped encourage Team Cherry to keep the ball rolling into updates and sequels. Though gameplay and art direction undoubtedly define the experience, it simply wouldn't be the same, or anywhere near as satisfying or intriguing, without Christopher. As a significant step forward in his career, considering its size, it only proves further what a real talent he is, and why so many are mesmerised by his music.
Something that's really unique to games that I've really enjoyed with writing music in the Hollow Knight world is that a lot of the tracks or pieces of music for different areas and all that sort of stuff is really scored for those areas. So something like Green Path, I'm writing this music really to suit the location, and Crossroads, the music is definitely suiting the feel and the emotion behind the location. And I think every now and again to jump up out of your seat and pick up an instrument or something like that, or work with a fantastic, talented musician like Tim or Amelia. Those moments really help propel the inspiration for creating more, and it sort of snowballs, and yeah, you can kind of keep going from there.
Thanks to Christopher for speaking to me for the sound test, but thank you too for taking the time to listen. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you may be listening on. This first mini run of ST2 will soon be taking a short break for Christmas, before returning in 2020 with the rest of the series. In the next edition, Gareth Coker returns to the show in a great episode about Ori and the Blind Forest. A beautiful game with appropriately beautiful music, Gareth and I discuss how he captured that, the collaborators involved, and more. To help support this show, please head on over to patreon.com/_secretcave. To unlock a variety of rewards, including most of these interviews unedited. Over on my Patreon, there are many VGM-based rewards to tide you over until the new year, but I hope you're enjoying this first taste of ST2 in the meantime.